you a high performer, obsessed with growth, and looking for an edge? Welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance. Together, we'll discover underground secrets to unlocking the full potential of your mind, body, and spirit. We'll learn from some of the world's leading minds, from ancient wisdom to cutting-edge tools and everything in between. This is your host, Nick Urban. Enjoy the episode. Hello, Bioharmonizers, and welcome back to the podcast. This week, we're talking smart, simple, dogma-free nutrition that can be applied to both the family or even picky eaters that are adults. Today, we're joined by Asher Cohen,
an ex-corporate employee that saw a need in the market
for the absolute highest quality greens and pantry items and all other healthy living products. So he combined his passions of entrepreneurship, of food, of nutrition, and co-founded Dr. Cowan's Garden. They started with their line of vegetable powders, real vegetables grinded up and processed properly to maintain all the delicate phytochemicals and bioactive ingredients, and then they expanded out from there. In this conversation, we certainly demonize certain food groups and particular additives or ingredients. I'm actually not completely against grains or gluten in general. In fact, some of the oldest ancestral sciences stated that they have a purpose in the right quantities and at the right time of year. They can even act like a bit of a beneficial hormetic stressor to the gut and the gut lining. But I'd be remiss to not mention some of the notes and the science behind these ingredients. First of all, glyphosate, and then also grains and gluten specifically. Glyphosate was originally patented by a Japanese researcher and then in 1976, repatented in the USA as a chelator to strip minerals and residue from the insides of industrial pipes. And it does something similar inside the human body and prevents the absorption of minerals. Every year, we spray billions of pounds onto crops to stress plants and produce greater yields in the short term, and then as a desiccant to dry the plants out faster. And here are just a few of the dizzying list of problems associated with glyphosate. First of all, glyphosate inhibits the shikimate pathway, the pathway that plants use to create alkaloids or the medicinal value of food. Glyphosate also inhibits our body's ability to convert sulfur into sulfite, and that leads to a reduction in bacteria helping us to metabolize oxalates and to produce certain hormones like the anti-aging progesterone. It blocks our ability to use amino acids like glycine and lysine. And considering that amino acids are the building blocks of life, that has serious consequences. It also breaks down acetylcholine, the neurotransmitter associated with learning and memory. It increases glutamate, which is a neurotransmitter that can lead to excitotoxicity or the killing of neurons. It can drive heavy metals deeper into the brain, increases the risks of liver damage and non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, even in tiny doses. It's associated with celiac disease, hormonal disruptions, fertility issues, and even cancer. There are huge lawsuits around glyphosate and cancer going on right now. For more information on glyphosate and a newer, similar product that's coming to market called Liberty Link, check out the work of Dr. Zach Bush or Dr. Stephanie Senek. All right, now we'll cover gluten a little faster. So at a high level, there's over 55 diseases caused by gluten. 99% of people with sensitivity to it do not know they have sensitivities. Gluten-free products usually contain more sugar. which leads to increased weight gain. And if you use a continuous glucose monitor or test your blood glucose regularly, you'll notice that a slice of even whole wheat bread can spike your blood sugar higher than a candy bar will. We've selected four varieties of wheat that contain both higher levels of gluten and the endocrine disrupting starch called amylopectin, which is particularly effective at inducing insulin resistance. Gluten modulates the permeability of the blood-brain barrier, allowing things to enter, such as toxicants and allergens and infectious agents that shouldn't be there. And then the zonulin in gluten increases the permeability of your gut, allowing things that you consume to leak into your bloodstream. Also not good. Gluten overloads the brain with the neurotransmitter glutamate, which can lead to overexcitation and neuronal cell death. The gluten molecule looks like thyroid hormone, which can trigger an attack on the body's thyroid gland. This form of autoimmunity is known as Hashimoto's, and it's by far and away the most common. Interestingly, coffee and chocolate can also increase your gluten antibodies and thus contribute to greater sensitivity. Last on this front is how gluten resembles a drug. It disrupts the biological activity of a hormone called leptin, which is associated with fullness. It acts as an opioid due to the presence of gluten exorphins and gliadorphins. Gliadorphin and gluteomorphin create an opioid-like peptide from the digestion of gluten. What appears to be hunger is actually just a cycle of craving and withdrawal caused by the pharmacologically active narcotic peptides within wheat. So it's absolutely fair to call this a drug and to avoid it for the most part. Now that we've set the stage for my dislike of wheat and grains and gluten and the alternatives, hopefully this conversation makes a little more sense. And if you want to try their vegetable powders or their unrefined, cold processed, clean seed oils, the only ones I would consume, you can use the code URBAN, URBAN, to save 15% on your Dr. Cowan's Garden orders. The show notes to this one will be at mindbodypeak.com/79. If you find this at all useful, I'd love it if you scrolled to the bottom of whatever player you're listening to this on and leave a quick rating and review. That's how I know what you're interested in, and also how I continue bringing you thought-provoking guests. It'll take you no more than 15 seconds, and there's a link to do so in the description of this episode. All right, sit back, relax, and enjoy this conversation with Asher. Asher, welcome to Mind Body Peak Performance.
Hey, Nick, thanks for having me.
I'm excited to chat today about all things nutrition and what you guys are working on over there.
Yeah, I'm excited to share. We've done a lot this year. We've had a lot of cool stuff. So yeah, happy to dive in and share what we're doing.
Before we get into your background, let's start off with the unusual or non-negotiable things you've done so far today for your health and performance.
Let's see. Well, I like to get up early and work out, and I do, what is it called? It's called GOTA, Greatest of All Time Athletes. Have you heard about that? Yep. It's really unique, and I think it's an awesome way to train, basically get stronger, more fit. It's great for recovering from injury. And essentially what it is, and I'm no expert, I'm just training with someone, but you're basically positioning your body in a way where you're creating internal tension that acts as if you're actually lifting weights. So you can position your body in a way where you're literally just lifting your arms you're getting the same workout as if you were doing, lifting heavy weights, 100 plus pounds, but you're just using your body's positioning and internal tension. And it's a great way to work out. I've been doing it with someone who's a trainer in this for, let's see, probably 6 months now. And I feel great. I like how it's, I like it a lot, and it's just a great way to work out and train. So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
If that can build muscle and also at the same time being low impact and extremely accessible when you're traveling or you don't have access to free weights and an entire gym, sounds like it's a very powerful like fitness modality.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what I was looking for. Cause I would do squats and deadlifts and those types of things. And sometimes, kind of injure my lower back. That was kind of my weak spot. And with literally zero weights, you can get what I think is a really good workout. A good workout for me is probably a good workout for most people. And I think it's a great workout. And like you said, it's a great way to, if you don't have access to a gym or weights, or if you don't want to use weights and want to use your body's movement as a way to build muscle, recover from injury, or just, maintain a level of fitness, I think it's phenomenal. So I'm happy that I met this guy. We're actually going to be working together on a future project that I can't talk about right now, unfortunately, but maybe on a future show.
Absolutely. Well, let's dive right into the feature of today's episode. And there's been a resurgence and I guess a factioning of the health and wellness industry into two groups, the plant-based folks and the now animal-based folks. And more people, I've seen little kids coming up and saying they don't need to eat their veggies because Liver King told them so. And one of your core lines of products is vegetable-based nutrition products. So if you were to convince that same little kid, then maybe it's a good idea for them still to include some form of greens or produce in their diet, what would you say?
Well, I would say that there has never been a successful tribe that's ever been strictly animal-based. And I would also say that there's never been a successful tribe of people. This goes back to our sort of ancestral past. There's never been one that has been a vegan either. So I think there is a healthy combination of both plant-based foods and also animal-based foods, specifically fats that are necessary for a healthy diet. So to the person who's going full carnivore, I think that there is room for plants in a healthy diet, but also I would caution the vegan that they are not getting the necessary animal fats, most specifically fats, but also proteins in their diet as well. So I think there definitely needs to be a marriage of both there.
Absolutely. I'm with you on that. And the animal side tends to have more problems with long-term gut things and even some hormonal imbalances over the long term as the body doesn't get some of the building blocks it needs. And on the vegan side, plant foods do have a lot of the most important nutrients, but not in the most bioavailable forms. And unless you're eating pounds and pounds and pounds of the same produce, you're probably not absorbing enough of certain nutrients.
They'll say, oh, well, we can get, all the protein we need, but they're really missing out on what I think is the, critical part. And that's the fat component of the animal diet. And we're not, obviously we're not talking about the fat that you find in Doritos or Oreos or something. We're talking about healthy fats from grass-fed, pasture-raised animals, whether it's, the actual meat or in the case we sell a ghee, which is, basically the protein removed from butter. So it's the straight butter fat from pasture-raised cows that are certified A2 breed, which is the better type of breed of cattle. A lot of times people have issues with the A1 protein, and that can cause, lactose intolerance and all types of dairy issues that people face, and that a lot of times it's because of the A1 protein in there, and you really want the A2, and that's what we have. And so animal fats are critical to a healthy diet.
So Asher, tell me how you got involved in this. What made you decide to pursue a business in the nutrition world and to focus on it yourself?
I've always been really into food. Cooked since I was a young kid, you know, 10, 11, 12. I've been cooking for myself. And then grew up with my dad, who was, you know, a doctor, and health food was a big part of growing up. I wasn't such a fan of it growing up, but, you know, was able to enjoy more food that I was cooking for myself. I was a better cook than I think my parents were growing up. So I would be able to cook good tasting, healthy food. Always had an entrepreneurial sort of mindset, wanted to do something for myself. And it was really my dad's idea for the business, for the product, actually, I should say. He had access to a large community garden. Turned out he was the only one who really went there regularly. And so he had tons of produce, and he had a medical practice where he would tell his patients to eat a wide variety of vegetables, in addition to many other things. And that was very difficult for people. There's not always available. They don't like vegetables, you know, any number of reasons. And so he started making the powders, and that's when he came to me with the idea. And I thought it was a good idea, something that we could build a business around. And we started making vegetable powders. A good way to think of them is like a seasoning or a spice. Use it to cook with and get extra nutrition, vegetable diversity into just about anything that you're eating. It's great for people with picky eaters, or if you're just looking for a general nutrition boost. It will enhance just about anything that you could eat. And so it combined my desire for the entrepreneurial itch that I had. So it fulfilled that area, but I also love food. And so it was a perfect marriage of the two. And, you know, at the time I was working in corporate downtown Boston type of, that was not the life that I envisioned for myself, and set out on this with my dad and my brother also. And we started the business. We launched in 2016. And since then, we've added a lot of new stuff that I'm very excited about. And I basically get to create my pantry on that's available to customers. And so, you know, it's like I get to create what I want to eat and then make it available for our customers. And so, you know, I'm always looking for the best sources and to process everything in the correct way. We're constantly adding new stuff. We've added a lot of stuff, especially this year. You know, kind of think of it as like Thrive Premium, where Thrive Market has, you know, better for you types of foods and snacks and those types of things. But if you're looking for the really high quality, best possible sourcing with proper processing, that's when you'd come to Dr. Cowan's Garden.
I like it. That's the first time we've mentioned the name of your company today, Dr. Cowan's Garden. And I like that you've been able to meld your two passions, the business entrepreneurial side and then also the nutrition side, and you get to be your own guinea pig and create what it is that you like. And if people haven't made the connection yet, I think a lot of people in the health and wellness world may know your father. What was his name?
Tom Cowan. Yes.
Yes. Dr. Tom Cowan.
Yeah.
He has some really interesting reads that I've gone through, some controversial takes, and that's why I appreciate his work. And in talking to you, I learned that you have some tips to make nutrition easier for the family and specifically around kids. Like, I was one of the weird kids growing up that actually liked to eat broccoli, and that set me apart from most of my peers. But if someone isn't like that, for the vast majority of kids out there, like, how would you help a parent get their kids to eat higher quality foods and not resent them for it?
Yeah, great question. And I know a lot of people struggle with this. We get, lot of reports of people saying, you know, oh, wow, you know, I could get my kid to eat this. And, you know, I never thought that they'd be eating burdock, you know, burdock root, you know. I'll come to this, or I'll start off by saying, you know, I have a almost 8-year-old daughter, a 5-year-old son, and a almost 3-year-old son. So I have a little bit of experience in this area. They also had food allergies. So you combine those two things with, you know, now you're really starting to try to get creative with how you feed your children. You know, obviously you want them to eat healthy, but then with the added food allergy, and they all had different allergies. So the oldest is allergic to gluten and nuts, and was allergic to dairy and eggs grown out of those, but still allergic to nuts, peanuts, and gluten. The middle one is allergic to coconut, was allergic to eggs, but is growing out of that. Also allergic to peanuts as well. The youngest one was allergic to dairy, but it's growing out of that. So, but the basic premise is, you know, you have to start somewhere. So start with where you are and figure out what your kids will eat. You know, they'll eat something. You know, they're not going to go hungry for very long, but they will eat something, whether it's a pancake or chicken nuggets or, you know, whatever it is, they will eat something. And let's take pancakes, for example. It's hard to imagine that most kids won't eat pancakes. So you start with, maybe you're starting with a box in a store. You buy your pancake mix in a store, and that's your starting point. Well, you can always improve that. So what if you took that box of pancake mix and you added beet powder or something like that? Beet powder, it's sweet, it's red, so it'll turn the pancake mix pink, and you can play around with colors. But it'll also add a little bit of sweetness to the pancake. And now you've just enhanced the nutritional quality of the pancake that you're making to include beets. Now, what if you add burdock powder? Burdock has a nutty, a little bit of sweet flavor to it. And, you know, now you're adding beet and burdock powder. So you're getting two vegetables into your kids when you previously would have only had one. Now, what if you substituted that pancake mix with a gluten-free flour and added your own additions to it? You know, your baking soda and that kind of stuff. So, you know, that would previously come into a mix. Now you've enhanced the quality and nutritional power of the flour that goes into your pancake. And you essentially take that concept through the progression. So you start off with maybe a box of pancake mix from a store, but then you're adding to it, and then you're substituting out a better for you flour or a better for you base for those pancakes. And you just make whatever they will eat the best possible you can make. And so you go from a pancake mix to the store to now you're grinding your own flour from grains that you're sourcing directly from farms. You're adding everything in the night before. Then you add some sort of acid like a yogurt or lemon juice to ferment the mix before. And then you add your beet powder and burdock powder. And before you know it, you've actually gotten something actually healthy in them. And then you add your grass-fed butter or ghee. You cook down berries instead of syrup. And you've turned something that is unhealthy, a boxed pancake mix from a store, into something that's actually fairly healthy and nutritious for your children, because you've added vegetables, you've switched out the flour from processed white flour into something that's more nutritious, like a gluten-free flour mix, which we're actually coming out with next week. Or you can grind your own grains, and then you're fermenting them the night before. You're adding healthy fats, whether it's butter or ghee, and then you're switching out the syrup that you buy in the store for berries. You can buy frozen organic berries at the store, cook them down in some water and some honey, and before you know it, you've gotten yourself a really healthy breakfast for your children. And take that same principle with just about anything that you eat. You know, whether it's mac and cheese or chicken nuggets, you can make your own chicken nuggets. You can add your, you know, egg and breading and add some vegetables to the breading, of the chicken nuggets and air fry them instead of deep frying them. And there's all these little strategies and tips and techniques that you can use with just about anything that they will eat to make it from a junk food into a health food.
That's awesome. There's so many cool nutritional upgrades like that. And I was just thinking that although we've mentioned this in the context of kids, this very much applies to adults as well. Like if you're a big mac and cheese fan, there's a lot of substitutes you can make that won't actually detract from the taste, the enjoyment of the dish. They can add new flavors, more complexity to it, and at the same time, give you more from what would otherwise be a nutrient displacing meal.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of it in the context of my children, but yeah, absolutely. If you're an adult who maybe doesn't appreciate vegetables or healthy eating, you can make certain substitutions in what you will eat or what you like to eat, and you can make a big difference.
Okay, well, that's a good place to start. And then what about when we're deciding on products to add into our diets? Like, say we want to make these, some of these substitutions, how do you go about evaluating what's a good quality beet powder or a good quality any of these other substitutions we're going to make?
Well, you have to look at the sourcing and then the production methodologies or techniques. Not sure the right word there, but the sourcing is important because, you know, you need to be able to trust where whatever it is you're eating comes from. You know, is it genetically modified? You want to stay away from that. Is it, you know, conventionally grown? You want to stay away from those. Those have, you know, pesticides and other toxic chemicals in them that make it, you know, even if it might be something healthy, you know, you're still getting the toxins in there if you're not doing organic. And even organic is, you know, sort of the standards have relaxed a little bit on organic, so that's not always the end all be all. So you want to know your sources as much as possible, you know, and then just in the times that we're living, you want to localize your supply chains as much as possible as well. So the more you can source directly from your farmers that you know and trust, the better. Rather than, you know, let's say Cal Organic or Foxy Farms, you know, even if they do have the organic stamp on them, can you really trust it? You know, maybe. And so localize your supply chains, get to know where your food comes from. That's first and foremost. And then you need to look at the processing of the ingredients. So for example, you know, if you're someone who eats, you know, a lot of cereal or nuts, you know, for example, there's a proper way to process those nuts and grains. Grains and nuts need to be soaked or sprouted before you eat them. What it does is it breaks down the phytic acid and makes the nutrients more bioavailable. So you're better able to absorb the nutrients in your food, and you're also not getting those toxins in there as well. You know, I'll use another example of kale. You know, a lot of people like to eat these raw kale salads, but what they may not know is that there's oxalates and goitrogens present in raw kale. You really should be cooking or blanching or steaming your kale before you eat it. And what that does, again, it breaks down the anti-nutrients, the oxalates, the goitrogens, and it also makes the nutrients more bioavailable. So you don't want to boil the crap out of it to where it's a, you know, mushy goop. And that's kind of the principle that we use with our kale powder or the kale that goes into any of the blends or the nuts or the nut butters that we sell. Everything is sourced from the best possible sources and then processed in the correct way. So the kale is blanched or steamed, the nuts are soaked, the grains are soaked and sprouted. And so that's how you know that you're getting the best food is, number one, it's the sources. Number two is the proper production. It's great to have an organic, you know, almond butter or something like that. But if they're not sprouting the almonds beforehand, it's not the healthiest it could be.
Yeah, that's actually an important point to expand upon, because one thing that happens when you consume these foods that are not processed properly and they're really high in oxalates or phytic acid or trypsin inhibitors and or any of these other myriad plant anti-nutrients, they don't just prevent you from absorbing the nutrients from that particular food, but if you have a bunch of like poorly or not processed raw nuts and they're chock full of those, then you go and drink a really healthy, expensive green smoothie, you're not going to be absorbing those nutrients as well. It's blocking it for a longer duration than just for that one food.
Right. And that's why, you know, the proper processing is so important. And it's something that people probably don't even think about or are aware of. You know, I don't know how many people know that they should soak their grains before cooking them, you know, and it goes for grains, beans, nuts, seeds, anything like that. They do need to be soaked before consumed.
Ancient humans knew this, and in certain parts of South America, they would use the water runoff from quinoa as like a soap because the saponins in it are like very, I don't know the word, cleansing. And in that sense, that they just bind to things and clean. You don't necessarily want that going on inside of you.
Yeah. Yeah. It is this ancient knowledge of food processing and preparation and also storage too. You know, like how do you store food properly with no refrigeration? You know, they needed to know these certain techniques, you know, whether it's fermenting or something like that, to properly store food and preserve it for the winter. And it actually helps to break down and process the food and make it so that your body is able to absorb and process the nutrients in a more efficient way.
Yeah. And especially with dehydrating foods, soaking them beforehand not only can get rid of some of the anti-nutrients, but also it can prevent like the food from leaching water out of your body to rehydrate the food and dehydrating you potentially.
Yeah. And that's what's done with every one of our products. You know, we sell a pecan butter, an almond butter. The almonds and pecans are soaked, sprouted before they're dehydrated and then ground into the almond butter. It makes for the best possible, healthiest almond butter or whatever it is that you're eating. And not many people are willing to take that step. You know, it adds cost. And, you know, people are trying to produce lowest price food product or any product in general. And it's not always the healthiest. So be careful of the manufacturers who are skipping those steps or don't even know that those steps should be taken. You know, maybe it's not about, you know, trying to pinch pennies. Maybe it's just not knowing the proper way to process these things.
In full transparency, I know these. I know I should be soaking, sprouting, and fermenting my foods whenever possible. But also there's a huge time component there. And if I get a bag of nuts, I don't want to sprout it for 12 hours and have it the next day. I want to have it right then. Are there any tips you have to expedite the process or for those that are in a hurry and maybe don't have the finances for a premium product like that they can do to get at least some of the benefits in a much shorter period of time?
Well, that's a tough one. I mean, if you're trying to do it yourself, which, you know, I get it, if people are on a budget, they might not have money to buy, you know, the pre-soaked nuts that we're selling. You know, it's really about the commitment, and it does take a lot of time and commitment to do this, and, you know, full transparency as well. Like, you know, I'm not sprouting every time I cook rice or something like that. But, you know, I do have access to the granolas, the nuts and nut butter. So I have access to that, which is kind of why I do what I do. But what you can do is, you know, if you know you're going to have rice the next day, start soaking it overnight. And meal preparation is one way that you could do it. We actually sent out meal plans to our email subscribers last year. And I think we still have them available on the website. So there are meal plans that would essentially take you through a full week's worth of cooking. And so you could get your shopping and do all your meal preps on the weekends and then start with your meal plan. And then, you know, so for example, it would be, you know, if you do a roasted chicken one day, you might have a chicken soup the next day. We did try to incorporate, you know, leftovers from one meal into the next meal and then help guide you through the shopping and then the preparation and then the actual meals in the meal plan. So there's a way. Yeah. So I think there's 13 of those. So on the website. So if you wanted to just check that out and, you know, you could cycle through those 13 and be pretty much set.
Yeah. That's a fully optimized meal plan.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. So it's just a value add that we tried to give to our customers. I know a lot of them really appreciated it.
Well, Asher, say you don't have your own products available and you're out grocery shopping for your family. Maybe you're on vacation. You forgot your powders. What do you look for as huge yeses on the labels or huge red flags?
Well, I mean, try to avoid labels in general. I try to shop at the outside of the store. So huge red flags would be, you know, anything that's not organic. I don't do that. I have a huge garden. We almost never have to buy vegetables. We get our eggs, chicken, and all our meat products from literally neighbors. So I don't go to the grocery store very often. I wish I could give more tips, but you know, like we produce so much of our own food myself and with neighbors. You know, I literally have a neighbor who I got a full cow from. So we're eating food that, you know, 90% of our food comes from either my backyard, my neighbors, or business relationships. So
nice.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Yeah. So grocery store shopping is not, I'm not an expert.
But if we talk about organic specifically, you said you always buy organics. And of course, that should mean the food's not genetically modified and that it's not sprayed with pesticides. What are the reasons, like at a high level, why do you want to avoid conventional foods when possible?
Most of the time it's going to have, you know, Roundup glyphosate present. That's the, I don't know if it's the main one, but it's one of the main pesticides that a lot of farmers spray. And it's just horribly toxic. I mean, it's linked to a whole host of health ailments. And I try to avoid that as much as possible. Then you run the risk of it being genetically modified. And, you know, you definitely don't want those in your body. Yeah, you want as clean and as little processing as possible when you're shopping. So I try to, when I do shop, I try to stick to the outside of the stores, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables, meats. And then if I do go into the center aisles, it'll be, you know, like your olive oil or, you know, something like that. But, you know, if you want to eat healthy, you really do have to be able to cook. You know, I don't think there's any way around it. You know, that there might be some better for you stuff that you can heat up and prepare that's, you know, sort of prepared ahead of time. But really, I don't know any other way around it but cooking. The way to think about it is your health is more of an investment than an expense or a time suck. And so it's a shift in mentality to really have health being at the front of your life. And so that's how it's always been for me. Maybe not always, but in my adulthood anyways, it's been a very big focus of my life. And so, you know, cooking your food, you just got to do it. And you can start simple. You can, you know, bake chicken and steam vegetables. You know, when I worked in corporate, I'd bake a whole big thing of chicken on Sunday and do a whole big thing of steamed vegetables. And that would essentially be like three or four dinners and lunches for the week. And so that's how I lived, you know, baked chicken and steamed vegetables. And it was very basic, didn't always taste the greatest, and it got pretty boring, but it got me by. It was relatively healthy, and it was a way to, you know, save time, busy working and commuting and all that stuff. So
let's go back to the topics of glyphosate, one of the primary pesticide, herbicide.
Anti-life
compound that's used on crops. And then also to gluten specifically, because you mentioned that both of those are key reasons, are key parts of your dietary avoidance. And when I was looking through my notes, I noticed that one of the big changes that happened in the early 1900s was that we went from stone grinding processing of grains to steel grinding. And when that happened, that concentrated the gluten and it reduced the amount of fiber that was in wheat products. And at the same time, glyphosate is a registered antibiotic and it has all kinds of dubious news around it, including huge lawsuits. And it was believed that it was, quote, safer than water for so long because it didn't directly affect human cells, completely neglecting the fact that we have a gut microbiome and microbiomes around our body, and it has profound impacts on them. And there's like horizontal gene transfer and certain things like that, that the affected microbes can transfer their new genomes, their genetically modified genomes in some cases, to neighboring microbes. So it's a scary world.
Yeah, I was about to say that sounds pretty scary, and all the more reason to avoid it. I didn't know that specifically about gluten or glyphosate. I did know, you know, that it's horrendously toxic, speaking of glyphosate.
And so where I was going with all this talk about gluten and glyphosate is that I've read some stuff on the internet about how problems around gluten intolerance and sensitivity really started spiking as we spray more and more glyphosate, because the body registers it as a foreign molecule that no longer knows how to process. It's like an adjuvant almost that causes the immune system to flare up in ways it didn't used to. And if you look over at Europe and other countries that don't use glyphosate because it's been banned there, they don't tend to have the same problems, and they also have different processing styles. But it's interesting just to compare those little notes, that the anecdotes you hear from people who travel over to Europe, they have the gluten there, the grains there, and they come back thinking they're fine, only to realize that, nope, when I eat grains in the U.S., I still have the same issues.
I was going to mention that as well. I've heard many stories of people who have gluten allergies or intolerances. I don't know what the difference is, but they have a gluten allergy or intolerance in the U.S., but they can go over to Europe and eat gluten fine. And yeah, I think you're right. It has something to do with probably mainly the glyphosate that's sprayed on it in the U.S., but also the way that it's processed. And I'm not too familiar with the difference between stone ground versus metal ground, steel ground. But I can imagine that there's something there that sort of affects the nature of the proteins and the gluten in it that makes it difficult for us to handle. Because I would bet that there's a bunch of people who think that they can have gluten, like they don't have a visual reaction right away. My daughter has a visual reaction, and then she'll, you know, it'll come out of her if she eats it. And I wouldn't be surprised if people still have these intolerances to gluten, but it doesn't manifest in ways that are immediately noticeable. You know, so that's where you'll have, you know, this like chronic inflammation and chronic gut health issues that could be related to the gluten products that you're eating, which would also be tied into the glyphosate that's in there as well. So it's that combination that you really want to stay away from.
Hit the nail on the head there with the distinction between an allergy is apparent and obvious. You know, if you're allergic to a food, because immediately after you have obvious symptoms that are hard to ignore, versus an intolerance, you can just have impaired digestion, you can feel the brain fog, something along those lines, and it can take up to 3 days after you eat the food to present itself. So it can be very hard to notice, especially if you're eating, say, pizza every second day or anything gluten-containing every second day. You will never get the opportunity to experience what life is like when you're not under that irritation. When I was browsing through your website, I noticed that you guys sell some seed oils, which to me was a huge red flag, but those are the refined seed oils. And what's different about your products?
The issues that you run in with seed oils, and I agree with you that many of them are actually toxins, but the reason why they're toxic is because of the heat that's been introduced into the process. And that's true even with quote unquote cold pressed seed oils. There is still heat that denatures the protein that turns it from a potentially healthy product into a toxin. And so we've partnered with a manufacturer that has a proprietary technology that stone grinds. You know, we were talking about stone ground with in the gluten part, but they use a stone ground process that doesn't introduce any heat into any of the process. Mm-hmm. And so it's this pure extracted, cold extracted seed oils from a number of different seeds. You know, we just launched a coriander seed oil, and, you know, cilantro coriander seed is known for binding to the heavy metals that are in you and then helping your body release those. So that's, you know, good for that one. And then, you know, black cumin, sesame, milk thistle, pumpkin seed, they all have a variety of different health benefits associated in them. But it's again, it's the proper processing of the ingredient. You know, we talked about soaking and sprouting nuts. We talked about soaking and sprouting grains. We talked about blanching kale. Whatever it is, it's the proper process. And so this uses the a proprietary stone ground technology that doesn't introduce any heat into the process. And so that's how you have your pure seed oil that isn't harmful, and it's actually very healthy because there's no heat introduced at any point.
I'll have to try your black cumin seed at some point, the extract, the oil, because I've heard it dubbed by an ancient culture, I forget which one, the cure for everything but death.
Nature, whatever you want to call it, has given these, like, these, you know, amazingly powerful herbs and plants and you know, natural remedies in all different parts of the world. So, like, black cumin might be, you know, the amazing plant in one area. You know, turmeric is the amazing plant in another area. Strophanthus is the amazing plant in another area. And all these cultures and peoples have, like, their food that they exalt as this amazing, you know, remedy that is a cure-all. You know, and it's, you know, black cumin, turmeric is another one. Strophanthus, I mentioned. You know, all these different cultures have these things. Also, all these different cultures have a fermented cabbage dish as well. It's interesting because you'll find that as in the, you know, northern Scandinavian cultures have it, and all the way down to your tropical Caribbean islands. You know, they also have their take all the way over to Korea. You know, they have their kimchi. You know, it's kimchi, it's sauerkraut. Yeah. In Haiti, it's called piklis. And, you know, it's again, it's this fermented cabbage dish that, you know, it's a way to preserve food, but it's also a way to enhance the enzymes in the cabbage and make, and, yes, you know, sort of upgrade the nutritional properties of the cabbage and also make it store longer. So, you know, it's cool how all these cultures have developed their own sort of unique take on diet, nutrition, health, food preservation, and natural remedies.
Yeah, and the acid in that would also stimulate digestion too.
And that's why, you know, my dad is a big part of the Weston Price Foundation, and, you know, fermented vegetables, especially sauerkraut, is a huge part of just about every traditional diet, and it goes back centuries.
I want to, like, make sure we close the loop on the seed oils, because that's a big one. I think people are starting to wake up to how bad they are. Whenever I walk into a home and they ask for help upgrading their nutrition and their pantry, I always throw away the seed oils first thing I do when I walk in, because it's, like, in my opinion, far more toxic than even refined sugar. You can metabolize refined sugar, and the seed oils, the industrial seed oils, will stick with you for years after they're introduced into your body and they're incorporated into your cell membranes. And you mentioned about the heat, and I think the problem with the heat is that it oxidizes the fats in whatever oil it is, and then those become dangerous oxidized fats, and they create, like, harmful byproducts, free radicals, those types of things. And then after that, they're processed with petroleum solvents like hexane to get more oil out of the canola plant.
Yeah, the remnants of whatever they got the first batch of it. Yeah.
Yeah. And then if that's not enough, then after that, then they add additional chemicals to deodorize the oil and make it smell neutral, because otherwise it's very offensive. And in that process, they create trans fats, which are also very destructive to human health. And so what you end up with is an oil that's been so heavily processed that it no longer has any of the characteristics of a healthy oil.
Absolutely. And again, you know, there's no heat introduced into this process, and none of the other steps are taken as well. We also don't recommend cooking with them. You know, they're more for, you know, a salad dressing or something like that. And if you taste them, you know, to your point about how they, they sort of add stuff to take out the flavor and the taste of it to make it more neutral so it can, you know, sort of go with it, any food. There is a definite taste, and it's sometimes a very strong one to these. The color is different. You know, you'll have like with the black cumin, it's very pungent. It's almost brown. You can definitely smell it and you can definitely taste it, and it's a little bit spicy. And I only recommend using maybe a tablespoon at most in a full salad. So a little bit goes a long way. Don't introduce heat to the process, because like you said, it oxidizes the fat, and that's not good.
Yeah, and that's some of the discrepancy between what the research says, that these fats are so healthy and they make so much sense to incorporate in the human diet, and the omega-3s in some of them and everything. But that's all flies out the window when you introduce heat, as the manufacturers do initially, or when you cook with them at high heat. And I've even seen research about some of the problems with, I think it's lung cancer in China, theorized to be due to the high temperature cooking with those oils, and it aerosolizes the tiny little toxins within the seed oils. And that is believed to be the main cause of the increasing rates of, I think it's lung cancer, and more so than smoking or necessarily poor air quality.
You know, it just goes back to the, you know, what we talked about earlier is the, you know, proper sourcing and the proper processing. And so, you know, I hear the vegans when they say, you know, don't eat meat, it's bad for you. And it's like, yeah, if you're eating a factory farmed cow, then yeah, it is bad for you. They're eating corn and soy, you know, that's genetically modified and sprayed with glyphosate. Yep. That's going to pass through the cow into you. And so, yes, that is not a healthy way to eat. And I totally disagree with how those animals are treated as well. But if you're eating a grass-fed, grass-finished steak or burger from, you know, a cow that's been treated well, fed grass their whole life and is, you know, lives a generally happy life, that's a very healthy thing to eat. We need to distinguish between the two. You know, a factory farm cow is not the same as a pasture raised cow on Joel Salatin's farm. It's totally different.
Yeah. Well, Asher, let's start to put a bow on this one, and we'll wind down. And before we do, I will ask you the usual. And that is, if there is a burning of the books and all knowledge is gone, you get to keep the works of three teachers. Who would you choose and why?
That's a good question. Burning of the books and keep three teachers. Well, Jesus would be number one. That has a very powerful and good message. You know, it would be hard to follow. It is hard to follow everything, but, you know, we can do our best and ask for forgiveness when we fail and still lead a pretty good life. So that'd be number one. Number two, maybe my dad, because, you know, we're currently living in a sort of a paradigm that teaches us to be afraid, and it teaches us a totally misconstrued way of looking at people and biology. And so that has so many different negative effects on people. You know, number one, they're afraid to, you know, hug their relatives. They're afraid to see people. You know, they think that someone is carrying something that could make them sick. And nothing could be further from the truth. We have a totally messed up understanding of biology and how people actually get sick and what makes them sick, and more importantly, what doesn't make them sick, just because it's the pressing issue of our time. Let's see, number three, maybe Rudolf Steiner. You know, he had a lot of really great ideas about health, education, farming, raising children. And I think if we did a lot of what he talks about in his work, I think we would, A, have a better environment. You know, people would be biodynamically farming and raising their children in better ways and educating their children in better ways. And then, therefore, they would turn into more healthy and well-adjusted adults that would stop all this, you know, nonsense about, you know, how many Instagram followers I can get. I think that's a good list of three.
That's a great list. And any particular book of your dad's that you'd recommend people check out if they're new to his work?
Check out Breaking the Spell. It's about 45 pages. Mm. It's basically the condensed version of the contagion myth, which basically made the case that viruses don't actually exist, and that there are no pathogenic viruses or you know, pathogenic things that are created or made inside our bodies and then passed to someone else. It's actually, we get sick for a variety of reasons, but none of them related to viruses. At Breaking the Spell, it lays down all the scientific research and information. It's all sources are cited, studies are referenced, and it's a very quick read that if someone's not familiar with his work, you should get a pretty good idea of what happened versus what didn't happen, more importantly, in the last couple of years. So he also called this before. He published an article, or we published an article in December of 2019, which is a couple months before everything happened. He said that every pandemic has been preceded by an upgrade to the electrical grid. And with the rollout of 5G, get ready for another global flu-like pandemic. And that was published in December of 2019, which was before everything went.
That sounds like Arthur Fistenberg's work in
Invisible Rainbow. Yeah, exactly. He was, yeah, he referenced and talked about his work in his work as well. So, yep. Mm.
Yeah. Regardless of what you all believe out there, I think it's important to look at both sides of the table, to look at it, to evaluate it, to see which makes the most sense given what you've seen and experienced, and not be closed off to new information, even if it contradicts some of your corely held beliefs, because the definition of growth, or my definition of growth, is being able to hold space for other ideas and refine and improve based on new evidence as it becomes available.
I would add to that, that regardless of what you believe, you can still be healthy and, you know, and get stronger. And, you know, I would say health and fitness is food and fitness is an important part of being healthy. And regardless of what you believe is going on out there, if you do believe that there's a pathogen that could make you sick, well, if you're strong and eating a healthy diet and generally healthy, you'll be much better able to fight whatever it is that's going to attack you.
And just remember that division and isolation and fear and stress and worry, those are well-researched to dampen the immune system, to weaken you. And so it's easy to say to try and minimize that. But when it comes to weighing time with loved ones, the people you really care about that you know are also healthy, careful by throwing that all out the window and deciding to hole up by yourself, worried for long periods of time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Asher, where can people connect with you online or pick up some of the Dr. Cowan's Garden? Is that the name?
Yep, drcowansgarden.com. I don't have a very big presence for me personally, so just connect with me through the businesses. If you're so inclined to delve into more, you know, different health topics, drtomcowan.com, and you can find us on all the major social channels and the alternative ones as well, because got to do that. So yep.
Well, that was a good way to wrap it up, but if there's anything else, any closing thoughts you'd like to leave listeners with, this is your chance.
You know, health starts with really a mindset. You know, are you going to look at it as a cost and expense, or as a part of investing in a healthier, more productive, more joyous and longer, happier life, you know? And so you're going to have a better time if you're not in pain, if you're not sore, if you're not stressed out, anxious. You're going to have a much better time if you're much more carefree, spending time with friends and loved ones. And it really is an investment that I believe is worth it. You know, I've made that in my life, and my life has been very rich, especially in the last few years. And it's really about the mindset shift that that taking care of your health, whether it's through exercise or diet, is really about, it's a lifelong commitment. And so take the time to invest in it, and you'll be glad you did.
Yeah, I'm 100% there with you. And as I say, you either invest in the higher quality nutrition, the healthy living up front, or you invest in it down the line, but in a different form in terms of hospital bills and medications that you wouldn't otherwise have. And one leads to a high quality of life throughout, where you get to enjoy those years. The other one leads to a standard quality of life, and at the end, it's a re-elevation back to your baseline.
If you don't have time to take care of your health now, you'll be forced to deal with it in the future. You don't want to go down that path.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Asher, thank you so much for joining me today on the Mind Body Peak Performance Podcast.
Awesome. It was great to be here. Thanks for having me. Take care.
All right. Take care. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Head over to Apple Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts and leave a rating. Every review helps me bring you thought-provoking guests. As always, you can find the show notes for this one at mindbodypeak.com/ and then the number of the episode. There, you can also chat with other peak performers or connect with me directly. The information depicted in this podcast is for information purposes only. Please consult your primary healthcare professional before making any lifestyle changes.